All of this business with the badges and the rucksacks had seemed insultingly simple-minded to me and many others I had talked to, as if the Convocs were a summer camp for 5-year-olds. In the course of a 15-minute jog across Tredegar, I came to appreciate it. There was no plan, no procedure so simple that it could not get massively screwed up when thousands of persons tried to carry it out at the same time. Doing it in the dark squared the amount of chaos. Doing it in a hurry cubed it. People who had mislaid their badges and their rucksacks were wandering around in more or less panic, but they gravitated to sound drummonds, announcing, "Come to me if you have lost your badge or your rucksack." Others twisted ankles, hyperventilated, even suffered from heart trouble. Military medics pounced on these. Grand Frais and Grand Sewers who failed to keep up found themselves being carried on Fid's backs. Running through the dark, mesmerized by their badges, people banged into one another in grand slapstick style, fell down, got bloody noses, argued as to whose fault it had been. I slowed to help a few victims, but the aid teams were astoundingly efficient, and quite rude about letting me know I should head for an exit rather than getting in their way. Ayla had really put her stamp on this thing. As I gained confidence that the evacuation was basically working, I moved faster and made a beeline through the giant page tree plantation, heavy with leaves that would never be harvested, to a rugged gap that had been blasted through the ancient wall. The opening was choked with rubble. Lights shone through from extramuros, making the dusty air above the aperture glow blue-white and casting long, flailing silhouettes behind the avowed who were streaming through it, clambering over the rubble pile, helped over tricky parts by soldiers who played flashlights over patches of rough footing and barked suggestions at any avowed who stumbled or looked tentative. My badge told me to go through it, so I did. Try not to think about how many centuries these stones I trod had stood until tonight. The avowed who had cut them to shape and laid them in place. Beyond the wall was a glacis, a belt of open territory that locals used as a park. This evening it had become a depot for military drummonds, simple flatbeds whose backs had been covered by canvas awnings. At first I saw only the few that stood closest to the base of the rubble pile, since these lay in the halo of light. But my badge was insisting that I penetrate the darkness beyond. When I did, I became aware that these drummonds were scattered across what seemed like square miles of darkness. I heard their engines idling all around, and I saw cold light thrown off by glow buds, by the spheres of wandering avowed, and by control panels reflecting in drivers' eyes. The vehicles themselves were running dark. Something overtook me, parted around me, and moved on. I felt rather than heard it. It was a squad of veilers, swathed in black bolts, running silently through the night. I jogged on for some minutes, taking a winding route, since my badge kept trying to get me to walk through parked drummonds. Another blown wall section, with its mountain of light, passed by on my right, and I saw yet another swinging into view around the curve of the wall. All of these gaps continued to spew avowed, so I didn't get the sense that I was late. Here and there I'd spy a lone Frau or Sewer, face illuminated by badge light, approaching the open back of a drummond, eyes jumping between badge and vehicle, the face registering growing certainty. Yes, this is the one. Hands reaching out of the dark to help them aboard, voices calling out to them in greeting. Everyone was strangely cheerful, not knowing what I and a few others now knew about what we were getting into. Finally, the purple line took me out beyond the last of the parked drummonds. Only one vehicle remained that was large enough to carry a cell of any appreciable size. A coach, gaudy with phototypes of ecstatic gamblers. It must have been commandeered from a casino. I could not believe that this was my destination, but every time I tried to dodge around it, the purple line irritably re-vectored itself and told me to turn back around. So I approached the side door and gazed up the entry stair. A military driver was sitting there, lit by his jija.
"Erasmus of Edhar?"
he called out, apparently reading signals from my badge. "Yes?"
"Welcome to cell 317,
he said, and with a jerk of the head, told me to come aboard.
"Six down, five to go,"
he muttered, as I lurched past him.
"Put your pack on the seat next to you. Quick on, quick off."
The aisle of the coach and the undersurfaces of the luggage shelves were lined with strips that cast dim illumination on the seats and the people in them. It was sparsely occupied. Soldiers, talking on or busy with Jijas, had claimed the first couple of rows. Officers, I thought. Then, after a few empty rows, I saw a face I recognized. Saman, lit by his super Jija as usual. He glanced up and recognized me, but I didn't see the old familiar grin on his face. Instead, his eyes darted back for a moment. Gazing into the gloom that stretched behind him, I saw several rows of seats occupied by rucksacks. Next to each was a shaven head, bowed in concentration. I stopped so hard that my pack's momentum nearly knocked me over. My mind said, "Boy, did you ever get on the wrong coach, idiot?" And my legs tried to get me out of there before the driver could close the door and pull out. Then I recalled that the driver had greeted me by name and told me to come aboard. I glanced at Saman, who adopted a sort of long-suffering expression that only an Ita could really pull off, and shrugged. So I swung my pack down into an empty row and took a seat. Just before I sat down, I scanned the faces of the veilers. They were Fra Osa, the FAE, Surave, the one who had sewn me back together with fishing line, Sura Esma, the one who had danced across the plaza and mashed, charging the sniper, and Fra Gratho, the one who had placed his body between me and the Geath leader's gun and later disarmed him.